the revitalized transitional National Assembly passed two bills. One was on the creation of a commission for truth, reconciliation and healing, and the other was a compensation and reparations authority. Now, as you know, war broke out in South Sudan in December 2013. And since that time, there have been various abuses of human rights, including war crimes and crimes against humanity that have been committed by all sides in the conflict. This has included murders, killings, sexual violence, recruitment of children into armed forces, the looting and destruction of civilian property, destruction of, and looting of humanitarian aid. So all these are crimes under international law. And so the 2015 agreement, which was signed in 2015, and the agreement that revitalized it in 2018, both these agreements talks about transitional justice.
And what is the fate of the hybrid court? Because I thought it should be part of these transitional justice laws. I thought it was part of that. What happened to the hybrid court?
Tanzo, you're very right. This is a very good question. What is the fate of the hybrid court? What has happened to it? And why is it not receiving as much priority as the other two bills and two laws have? I think the African Union has said that they're trying to communicate with South Sudan through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, but they're not receiving meetings or they're not receiving communication. The government has also said they're not receiving communication from the African Union. And it seems that they do not have a shared understanding of who is supposed to initiate the next step on the creation of the hybrid court. But these are all semantics. These are all excuses. We believe that if there is genuine political will and genuine commitment to establish this court will see the light of day. It is important that there are criminal trials for people that are most responsible for the terrible things that have happened in our country, for the terrible things that South Sudanese have undergone during the crisis, during the war. And so it is important, not to Human Rights Watch, well, to human rights, but to victims and their families, that justice is just not limited to the Truth Commission or to the Reparations Authority, that there has to be a holistic justice that addresses the needs of the people that want to see perpetrators put on trial.
Do you have any recommendations for the specialized parliamentary committees that are going to look at this two bills?
So there are a few outstanding issues, knowing that there are no laws that are perfect. One is the Reparations Authority, in as much as it tries to address the relationship between the Truth Commission and the authority, we think there are ways that it could function better in that, because the Reparations Authority will be receiving applications from victims who were referred by the Truth Commission. So the authority will be providing symbolic reparation and collective reparations, but only when its mandate is completed. And it will only award, you know, personal reparations where it is not possible to award collective measures. So we think that this puts personal reparations at the end rather than putting them as a priority or as not an option of last resort. We also think it has to be very clear what time period the Truth Commission will be investigating. Now, the peace deal says that the Truth Commission will be trying to look into the happenings since 2005, signing of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, to the 2018 peace agreement. That is the proposal of the 2018 peace deal. But as we know, the 2018 peace deal was written at a time where people thought the war crimes and the human rights abuses will end when the peace agreement is signed. But since 2018, there have been abuses that have continued. So another option for them to consider is whether it should continue until the end of the transitional period.
When you talk about creating compensation and reparation fund and authority, I'm looking at people whose properties or people who lost everything during the crisis. Is this going to be personal compensation, or is it going to be a group compensation? Bring us up to speed on some of these issues.
Absolutely critical questions, Tanza. And this will be the job of the mechanisms to address. It will be the job of the Reparations Authority to address how to go about doing this. Now, the definition of how they have the structure or the way the reparations authority is structured is in a very limited way, and that is to compensate both, you know, living persons as well as persons under the law, which is like a business that can that is created or established in law is considered a person. And so a business can be compensated for losses that they also suffered during the war.
And your initial reaction to this development was captured in your, you know, report. You say much more remains to be done to ensure credible process to advance justice and uphold victims' rights. What do you mean by credible process?
Right. Yeah, so a credible process starts from the design of the process. It starts from how you recruit the people that will be in charge of this process. Who do you appoint as the commissioner for the Truth Commission? Who do you appoint as the executive of the Reparations Authority? If you are able to shield these processes and mechanisms from political interference, if you're able to ensure that they have adequate budget, that they have adequate budgets, and that victims and witnesses can actually access them without fear, then this all contributes to their credibility. It would be a shame if these mechanisms are being established as a ticking box so that the government of the day says, here, we have done it. But then at the end of the day, you have mechanisms and processes that do not deliver their intended goal or their intended objective, which is ensuring that victims, survivors, witnesses, at the end of the day, are receiving justice.